This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. West Virginia Public Broadcasting has teamed up with the Allegheny Front, with support from the Benedum Foundation, to take an in-depth look at the Ohio River, specifically the Upper Ohio Watershed. What challenges do communities along the river face now and into the future? What opportunities exist as the region strives to diversify its economy? And how will climate change affect those opportunities? We hope to answer those questions and more through a series of stories collectively called Headwaters. I spoke with Allegheny Front executive producer Kathy Naur about how the series got started and what kinds of issues these stories will tackle. What led to this effort between your show, The Allegheny Front, and West Virginia Public Broadcasting to focus on water? Can you take us through the decision process?
You know, water, of course, the Ohio River watershed spans Pennsylvania and West Virginia and down and through Ohio. So coming together as two, you know, news groups looking at the issues, we realized that it's not just a West Virginia issue and water is not just a Pennsylvania issue, of course. So there have been efforts here in Pittsburgh to try to bring stakeholders together, multi-state, and try to come up with sort of a vision for the watershed. And that has not gotten very far, that effort. So we thought it would be great to talk about some of these issues, talk about water quality problems, talk about solutions to those problems, and look at how, you know, the watershed is managed and what could the vision look like. And I think that the approach to work with West Virginia and Allegheny Front really kind of brings the perspective together as two states moving forward. And we hope to just inform people that, you know, there could be a bigger vision for this watershed, not just the piecemeal efforts that we see across, you know, across the watershed.
One of the stories that West Virginia Governor Earl Ray Tomlin likes to tell is that when he was Senate president, he went to a national meeting with Senate presidents from around the country, and he gave a speech about coal. And a Senate president from one of the western states stood up and said, "President Tomlin, you can keep your coal. We'll take your water." So here we have this abundance of water that other states want, but are we taking care of it?
Well, that's a good point, because as, you know, climate change continues, and we are predicted to have more frequent storms, more flooding, we have this abundance of water. If we can properly manage it, understand how much water we have, how much water this region needs, how much water is needed downstream, then we can start making decisions about what to do with it, who can take it. You know, there's some, you know, fear among some of these experts that, hey, anybody could take our water. We have no structure in place to sort of manage withdrawals of the water. We don't know how much water is really needed downstream. So I think that's right. You know, as Western states start getting drier and drier, we want to be able to take advantage of that for this region, but also protect that water resource.
So we will hear this series of stories about water. What do you hope comes of it? What sort of action do you hope to see from citizens or governments?
I think the action is, you know, to understand the complexity of this region when we talk about water. You know, it's not just a problem. We want people to understand that this is a resource that's very valuable, not only to us, but to other, potentially other watersheds around the country or other states. It would be wonderful if, you know, if some of these stakeholders kind of got back in the game and thought that maybe this is a good idea to pursue a more regional approach to water, to how water impacts our economic development, how water impacts, of course, our quality of life and our health. So I think for us, you know, bringing these pieces together for the listener, just to help them understand the totality and the complexity of the water resource that we do have.
Can you kind of give us an overview of the stories that we'll hear and their topics and what we should be listening for?
This series will start this week. It'll run through mid-December. So we'll be looking at things like how farming is influencing water quality. There's some programs out there to clean up the water. We want to clean up farms. We want to look at how farm pollution might be influencing and impacting algae blooms in the river. We want to look at some models of communities that are doing things right, like Morgantown and Morgantown's source water, drinking water protection plan, and look at that as a sort of a model for other cities around, not only in West Virginia, but in Pennsylvania. We want to look at renewable energy on the river. We talk a lot about coal and natural gas, but there is our efforts to put hydropower on the dams throughout the Ohio River. We want to look at that. Is that a good idea? Is that going to impact, you know, fish and other aquatic life? So we'll be looking at issues of the barge industry and how that's changing as our industry changes and what the infrastructure is needed to continue that industry to grow. And we also want to look at economic development along the river and how that's different from parts of the river to different cities, and comparing Pittsburgh to Wheeling and other parts of the watershed. And so I think what you should listen for is sort of that regional approach we want to take to our stories. We want to be able to connect the dots of different cities and different towns in the watershed and what they're doing. And we also want to look at flooding. And as we have more intense storms, we'll have more flooding. And we want to look at what Pittsburgh's doing with green infrastructure as a way to manage its stormwater. See if that kind of approach, which is a more natural approach to stormwater, is that really going to work? Is that going to work into the future? And is that a solution for some of the flooding problems that we have?
This sounds like a compelling series, and certainly one we'll look for and look forward to hearing. Kathy Knarr of the Allegheny Front, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And the first of our series is coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. It's coming up on 751. Mostly sunny in the south, a bit cloudier in the north. Temperatures in the mid-50s to the mid-60s today. Mostly clear tonight with some patchy fog. Overnight lows in the 30s and 40s. Sunshine tomorrow and Wednesday with highs in the 50s and 60s. The Ohio River is known as one of America's working rivers. It's home to industry and is considered the nation's dirtiest waterway. But it also supplies drinking water, recreation, and natural habitat. Add climate change, and you have pieces of a puzzle that make up this watershed. Julie Grant reports on where the region stands now.
When you live in the Ohio River headwaters, hearing newscasts like this isn't too surprising.
Dozens of people are homeless after floodwaters destroyed their homes.
David Highfield. Or even hearing comments like this one from Pittsburgh triathlete Sarah Kaysen after a heavy rain.
I don't think anybody wants poop in the river. People are like, oh, it must just be rain runoff. Yes, it is. It is also raw, untreated sewage. It's gross. It's really gross.
Recent years have also brought news of chemical spills and algae blooms. But what if the river wasn't a problem to be dealt with, and instead essential to the region's health and economic future? What might that look like? Let's go to this party to get an idea. It's at a restaurant in the heart of a busy urban riverfront park. This is a who's who in water. Researchers, technology geeks, water treatment experts, political and business leaders. Everyone's talking about how water fits into the region's economic development plans. But we're not in Pittsburgh. This is the first annual meeting of Cleveland's Water Alliance. Cleveland, of course, is home to the infamous Burning River and Lake Erie, known for toxic green algae in recent years. But Cleveland's ahead when it comes to putting a value on its water and how to leverage it to benefit the region. Alliance Executive Director Brian Stubbs says their efforts are already paying off.
Now we're starting to see the investment community pay attention. So what we're trying to do is to get private capital engaged in this space. No longer is it a lift of just the state or just the city or just a watershed group. We're now trying to figure out and having conversations with big money. So look, tonight's about the organization.
Stubbs told Water Alliance members that their region has added more than 200 water technology jobs. They've got patents in the works. They're even launching a large-scale competition in cities around the Great Lakes to spur innovation in water technology. So if Cleveland's starting to bring in big money around its water, why can't the Ohio River watershed get similar action? Community planner Jerry Paytas with the consulting firm Fourth Economy looked into water's role in this region's economy.
I don't think it's top of mind. It's not something that people are thinking about. So in that regard, we're not really valuing what the water can mean to us long term.
The report he co-authored in 2011 found that water was already having a big economic impact. 3,000 firms were providing components, products, and services for the water industry, water supplies for agriculture, food processing, thermoelectric plants, and the energy industry supported more than $24 billion in the area's economy. The report also found that the region and the Ohio River headwaters has a unique opportunity to use its industrial strengths to grow a variety of water-related industries. But no one's coordinating a vision for the future of water in this region.
It's been referred to as the Wild West because there's no management of water.
Deborah Lang is in charge of special environmental projects at Carnegie Mellon University. After Paytas' report came out, she helped facilitate a committee of experts from Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio a few years ago. Their goal?
To start to get the headwaters region, which stretches all the way up into New York, prepared for the future of water.
But that effort largely stalled. There just wasn't much interest in a multi-state effort to create a vision for the watershed.
Probably the biggest hurdle, and probably why we've been at this for 20 years, is that nobody wants another layer of regulation, approval, fees.
Lang says there are already plenty of groups and agencies working on water issues in the headwaters region. On the state level, environmental agencies approve water withdrawals and regulate pollution.
So the Department of Environmental Protection might be granting permits.
There's the U.S. Army Corps.
The Corps of Engineers is monitoring water flow and managing their locks and dams.
There's a group called RAIN.
RAIN is collecting real-time water quality data.
And then there's ORSANCO.
Their compact has them worry about water quality in the entire Ohio River Basin. There's no coordination of all of that. So we have a lot of pieces of the puzzle that are working. We're close. But we just kind of need that little push to begin to coordinate.
This isn't a new concept. Other watersheds have been doing it for decades. There's the Great Lakes Compact, which spells out who can take water and how much. The Susquehanna River, the Delaware River, the Chesapeake Bay all have multi-state commissions with planning authority, but not the Ohio River. And climate change could make that even more important. As some areas become increasingly parched, the Ohio headwaters region is expected to see bigger rainfalls and more water.
Since we're a water-rich area, a water-poor area could, in essence, stick a straw into the water there at the point and begin extracting water.
There's no one lining up to suck up the Ohio River, at least not right now. But Lang says the region should be preparing. Community planner Jerry Paytas agrees, and for him, it's about the economy. Just look at tech companies like Google and Facebook. When they're recruiting new employees to the region, they need quality drinking water and a river clean enough for recreation.
If we don't manage the water withdrawals, if we don't manage the water quality, is going to be very difficult to add people or grow the economy. So it may not be so much of an economic driver, but it surely will become an economic break.
Paytas' 2011 report did not recommend a new water organization, but it did call for a multi-state task force or council to coordinate planning of the region's water resources. And as thirst for water grows around the world, he says the need for this is becoming increasingly important. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
In the coming weeks, the Allegheny Front and West Virginia Public Broadcasting will explore the future of the Ohio River watershed in our series, Headwaters. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our director is Chuck Anzalevich. I'm Beth Voorhees.